morning and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm Carol Van Dam in Washington, and here are some of the stories we're covering today, Friday, August 10th, 2018. A Sudanese official says the South Sudan peace talks will resume early next week.
You will also see to it that preparation of the implementation matrices for all the chapters of the revitalized assets also take place.
And the U.S. ambassador to South Sudan says the fighting has caused the need for more aid in South Sudan.
These are humanitarian needs that are not caused by a flood or a drought or an earthquake. These are caused by people.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Sudan says it will resume hosting talks aimed at revitalizing the 2015 South Sudan peace agreement early next week. Sudan's foreign minister says the parties will work to resolve the outstanding issues in the power-sharing deal recently signed in Khartoum. And he told the 64th extraordinary meeting of the IGAD Council of Ministers in the Sudanese capital that he's hopeful that will happen soon. Michael Atit reports for VOA from Khartoum.
Sudanese Foreign Minister Al-Dirdiri Mohamed Ahmed says Khartoum is ready to help the warring parties finalize agreements on the outstanding issues within the next 10 days. He says Sudan hopes to hand over to the parties a draft revitalized peace agreement by August 19th. Ahmed says over the next few days, he and other officials will engage South Sudan's warring parties in interpreting chapters 1 and 2 of the 2015 agreement to resolve the conflict in the Republic of South Sudan and work with the parties to amend chapters 3 through 8 and have them ready to be signed.
We will also see to it that preparation of the implementation matrices for all the chapters of the revitalized assets also take place. Likewise, we will discuss also the issues of funding at the implementation and the revitalization of the assets. The same thing, we are also going to consider the mechanism that we have created and find out how can we restructure and revitalize the old mechanism that we are having.
The United States, the United Kingdom, and Norway, known as Troika, issued a statement today saying they support the engagement of the region in recent talks on outstanding governance and security issues and acknowledge Sudan's role in hosting the talks, but warned that considerable challenges lie ahead. The Troika expressed its concern that the arrangements agreed to date are not realistic or sustainable. The statement went on to say, given their past leadership failure, South Sudanese leaders will need to behave differently and demonstrate commitment to peace and good governance. Ahmed hailed IGAD leaders for entrusting Sudanese President Omar al-Bashir with the responsibility of hosting the talks and called on the warring parties to cooperate with mediators.
We are very hopeful that our brothers and sisters of South Sudan will continue negotiating the way they did throughout the 41 days within which we have finalized the issues of governance and security arrangements. And with the same spirit, we are confident very much that they will finalize this matter within the few remaining days.
Speaking at the same IGAD Council of Ministers meeting, Ismail Wise, the IGAD Special Envoy for South Sudan, hailed the role played by the Sudanese president and said IGAD will continue to support Sudan to facilitate the peace process until final deal is reached.
I commend President Omar Hassan al-Bashir and his government for the progress made during the Khartoum rounds of negotiations. Without Sudan's timely intervention, we wouldn't have reached this far with the signing of the Khartoum Declaration Agreement and the agreement on the outstanding issues on governance and transitional security arrangements.
Wise encouraged IGAD leaders to continue engaging the international community and to lobby for more funding to support the implementation process of the ARCES. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Khartoum, Sudan.
And there is word today that Sudan's ruling party has selected President Bashir to run for re-election in 2020. That according to state media. Under Sudan's constitution, which was adopted as part of Western-backed moves to end the country's civil war in 2005, Bashir was supposed to step down after his second term. He won elections in 2010 and 2015, but the votes were marred by low voter turnout, a boycott by opposition parties, and criticism from international monitors. Bashir has ruled Sudan for 28 years. The National Congress Party's Advisory Council announced that Bashir would be its candidate after an overnight meeting in Khartoum. In the second and final part of our exclusive interview with U.S. Ambassador to South Sudan, Thomas Hushik tells Charlton Doki that the Trump administration will focus on providing humanitarian assistance in South Sudan and will only shift to development assistance when it's clear that peace and stability has returned to the country.
Since the conflict started in 2013, at the end of 2013, you've seen this very deliberate and necessary shift from what was a huge development effort to one that was focused much more on the humanitarian needs. These are humanitarian needs that are not caused by a flood or a drought or an earthquake. These are caused by people, namely the leaders of the government and the opposition who have gotten into civil war, and the civil war has included direct attacks on civilians, massive displacement, and has put an incredible number of people in severe humanitarian needs. So by necessity, we've had to shift a lot of resources into humanitarian assistance. If that ceasefire holds, if people start feeling that they have the confidence that security will stay in their region, then they can start concentrating on development. And then I think if that holds, you will see a gradual shift back. You know, when the humanitarian needs go down, there will be the ability to focus a lot more on development.
You mentioned the ceasefire there, and I was wondering if there is anything the U.S. government is doing to ensure that the warring parties respect the agreement on silencing their guns?
Well, of course, the primary responsibility, as I think your question even indicates, remains with the parties themselves. And I think that there is growing recognition of that by the parties. But also we were convinced that the outside countries, the neighbors and the broader international community could have done more to enforce the ceasefire agreement. So an important part of that is good monitoring. And that's an important thing, that it's a tool that the outside world has to measure the changes on the ground. Are the parties obeying the things that they – are they actually implementing the things they agreed to in the ceasefire or not? So monitoring is important. And enforcement, if there are people that are breaking the peace agreement, what we do about it. Some of that enforcement, again, the responsibility – does and should rest on the shoulders of the actual leaders, on either the government or the opposition. If a commander initiates an attack or an atrocity against civilians is something that would really get a lot of attention, then the leaders should take a step to pull that commander aside, take action to effect discipline. But the international community as well, and this is an IGAD agreement, needs to take steps to impose consequences on people that are violating the ceasefire agreement.
That's U.S. Ambassador to South Sudan Thomas Hushik speaking to my colleague Charlton Doki in Juba yesterday. Lawmakers from South Sudan's 32 states are demanding car and housing allowances from the government. The government paid $40,000 to each of the 400 members of the National Legislative Assembly last month. Grace Abalang, a member of the National Assembly representing the former Eastern Equatoria area, says MPs deserve the $40,000 car loan.
You know, the reason we were paid is because we have Emolument Act, which guides the privileges and the wages of the constitutional post holders. And in that act, stipulate that MPs for every term of parliament will be given 40,000 for car loan. So that's the reason and the basis MPs are paid the colour. And when we came in 2010, 2011, we were paid 40,000 for buying cars as a loan. And the loan was cut and it got finished. And we had another term for the peace agreement. This one is also called a new term. That's why we have new MPs and we have budgeted in the budget of last year, 2017-2018.
You were paid this $40,000 when you just voted to extend the mandate of President Salva Kiir. The optics of your actions is very worrying. Some critics call it a bribe. What is your reaction?
No, you know, this is not a bribe, and it's not the first time that we have extended the mandate of the president and of the parliament. We have extended this mandate before. In 2015, we extended the mandate. So it's not a bribe. It's our right. A right in the law. You know, an MP cannot be bribed, and that amount cannot even bribe me. It just came in a coincidence. It's happened at the time they have extended the term, but we have extended this term before. Why are we not bribed at that time? And we want to tell our people that as a leader, somebody representing thousands of people in their constituency, you cannot be footing, really. Even for someone to be called a honorable, you have to work honorably.
Grace, you are working honorably in a country where the majority of the people you represent can hardly put food on their tables. How can you enjoy your $40,000 when people are hungry?
MPs are even hungry like any other person. So if people are hungry, then MPs are part of the people hungry, okay? They are not super people. They are just with those people. We know the situation, but also it's our right to get it. Because when now I get it, I did not eat it alone. I've given, when I give to one person, my constituency, these people have gotten it, okay? MPs did not eat alone. They did not even buy the whole 40,000 with cars. They will help with their constituencies.
You are telling me that members of the parliament have the right to be paid 40,000 at a time when the country is experiencing serious economic crisis.
You know, Tanza, we know the situation. We represent the people of South Sudan. But we are saying also, as members of parliament representing our people, that MPs cannot continue dying through border accident. Their legs are broken, their arms are broken, and they are elderly. That's why we said, okay, let's budget for it. It was budget, that's why it was pay based on that. And also, we are working very hard that our people should have food on their table.
There are sections of South Sudanese who are saying, quote, you enjoy your $40,000, we will meet at the ballot during elections. How do you react to that?
Yeah, we had people saying that, but we'll go for election. Then we'll see who will stand up and say that, and we'll defend ourselves. And we have been defending ourselves before our constituencies. That this, what happened is like this, and they have understood it. Those who are saying it, some of them are not even those constituencies. They don't come from where we come. Our people understand our situation, and we come from different constituencies. If you go today to my constituency, Ikotos, they will say Grace have a right to get that car, because when Grace have a car, that car will be helping us. And I cannot be footing from Juba to Ikotos by I cannot foot from Juba to Ikotos by foot. I have to have a car to go to the constituency.
That is Grace Abalong, a member of the National Parliament for the former Eastern Equatoria State and chairperson of the Government Assurance Monitoring and Evaluation Committee at the National Assembly. She was speaking with my colleague John Tanza from Juba earlier today. You're tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Community leaders are arrested for evicting an entire fishing village. Find out more when we come back.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
what has been your biggest challenge?
I work in a corporate organization and I have 4 kids. My biggest challenge is, leaving them and getting a good person to take care of them. This has really been my biggest challenge.
I'm heartbroken. I don't know how to defend myself. Like, if I'm annoyed, I always cry. I cannot speak out what pains me. Instead, I keep it inside.
During my childhood, I was raised with my mother alone, without my father. So I had that challenge of having two parents together at the same time, to have that parenthood living where your father is here, your mother is here. So that life really disturbed me a lot.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Authorities in Jonglei State arrested at least six community leaders suspected of forcefully evicting an entire fishing community in Bor West County. Nearly 2 weeks ago, Biang community chiefs and some residents forced thousands of people in the Mading fishing community to leave their village, accusing them of fishing illegally. Deng Gaijeng has the details for VOA from Bor.
Last week, a local leader from Kolochwe Boma, Achangabul, confirmed he ordered the Mading community, which was fishing in Thorn, to evacuate the area. Bol claimed the community was fishing illegally in the area and said he had banned all fishing activity in the area until differences between the local communities were resolved. But this week, state authorities got involved. Atong Kwal Manyang is Jonglei State Information Minister.
About six people in total have been arrested. What's that? Four people from Thorn and two people are from Biang community. The case is, of course, with the legal department. That is where the case is so far.
Kwal says the local leaders were arrested in order to calm the situation and give state authorities a chance to investigate the root cause of the conflict between the two communities.
What the government has done so far, it has formed some committees to do some investigation, life and survival of these people. I mean, in terms of humanitarian and how they can survive through this period of crisis. And also, of course, law and order is an important part of this, as well as protecting properties of these people who are displaced.
Both residents say some evicted members of Mading community who had been living in Thorn retaliated by coming to Bo town and forcefully evicting members of the Biang community from their homes. Both resident Kwer Deng says his house is being occupied by somebody else. He's speaking in Dinka. Deng says he and his family have been living out in the open.
Hi, my wife and the children at the moment are living out of our compound. It has been a week now since the people who are occupying my house came. I did not respond in violence when I was asked to evacuate my home because I need peace. The governor one came to us a few days ago, but up to now, he has not done what he said, that the issue will be resolved soon.
Bob resident Achangamach says his house is also being occupied by somebody else. Speaking in Dinka, Mach says his family has been forced to live under the harsh conditions for about a week now. But he says he doesn't want the situation to escalate into violence.
Madina, Upanijiang.
You know the town is town and it is different from the village. What happened took place in the village and should not be escalated to the town. That is according to my opinion, because what is happening now is not good. My family has been displaced.
Both Mach and Deng says state authorities should resolve the matter as soon as possible to prevent further chaos from erupting in the communities. Kwal says state officials have yet to issue an order for those occupying other people's houses to leave. But she says the South Sudan Constitution does not allow citizens to take the law into their hands and that all citizens have the right to reside wherever they choose in the country. For VOA News, I am Deng Gaideng in Bor.
Uganda bus companies that operate between Kampala and Juba suspended travel between those two countries for the past 4 days to protest what they say are extremely high charges by South Sudanese customs and traffic officials. Hundreds of would-be South Sudanese travelers are stranded and say they're confused. South Sudan authorities say they are working with the bus companies to address the matter. Munyang David Mayar has more for VOA from Juba.
Mahmoud El-Hajj, head of the Ugandan community at the bus park in Juba, says Ugandan bus companies that transport people between Juba and Kampala are on strike to protest several issues.
It was an issue of Jamarke. from Numlia borderline. The American officers, they decided to offload all the, I think, some of the goods in the buses. And then the bus operators come to discuss about that one. The charges were abnormal, that they could not manage. They could not manage to pay such amount of the money. And due to that, they decide for the first day, they send the buses, second day, they send the buses, third day. Then when it reached the fourth day, they decided to stop the operation.
He says the bus drivers are also complaining about random charges demanded by traffic officers. And he says bus drivers are often harassed and ordered to pay unspecified fines whenever they accidentally run into or kill domestic dogs as they drive between the border town of Numili and Juba. More than 20 buses travel back and forth between Juba and Kampala every day. Most of the bus companies are owned by Ugandan businessmen with offices in Kampala. William Sebunya, the manager for Friendship Bus Company, says exorbitant charges make it difficult for bus operators to earn a profit.
There's no way where you drive night, day, and you go home empty-handed. So they have to do that so that they come down and get what they need.
Custom officials check buses at border crossing points when they enter normally. The buses are rechecked when they reach Nisitu, some 10 kilometers from Juba, and once again when they reach the bus station in Juba. Semunya says bus drivers want South Sudan custom officials to reduce the number of checks, which often cause delays. In addition, drivers are required to pay money to the custom officials at every checkpoint. South Sudan custom officials dispute accusations that their prices are too high. Captain James Morris is executive director in the office of the Director General for South Sudan Customs.
The officer in charge in Nimule has detected some other things which are really smuggled in through the buses, because these people are putting, I think, clothes and mixed with other valuables, and then they come in into South Sudan. And then when that officer was trying to detect the truth, then the buses went into strike.
Morris says bus drivers are working with traders and wrap valuables like smartphones into clothes as a ploy to escape custom charges on electronic goods. He says custom officials at the border in Numili recently became more vigilant in a bid to prevent traders and bus operators from smuggling goods into the country without paying taxes. Morris says custom officials are working to resolve the disagreement so that people can once again travel between Juba and Kampala.
It was an initiative from my director yesterday, as the thing is escalating to different positions. He has already instructed our boss in the border that let him allow things to be already at Sherikat, actually. But in real sense, it is it's just for the solution to help our public to continue their transportation.
Even though that message was conveyed to bus companies, there were still no buses at the bus station in Juba yesterday. Passengers going to Kampala were left feeling confused and frustrated. Peter Kawaja Duck is one of them.
Just as I came this morning, I got there is no buses here. I got this taxi here. But of course, I want to reach Kampala this evening. Otherwise, I will not attend my exam. It will be very difficult for me.
Duck and other stranded passengers are calling on the government of South Sudan and the bus companies to resolve the matter as quickly as possible to enable small-scale traders importing goods from Kampala to operate normally. For VOA News, I'm Manyang David Mayar in Juba.
Thousands of Ye residents in Ye River State took part in a peace rally today. They're calling on President Salva Kiir and rebel leader Riek Machar and other opposition parties to reconcile and implement the power-sharing and governance deal signed recently in Khartoum in order to pave the way for reconciliation and national reconstruction. Daniel Friday Martin has the story for VOA from Ye.
Thousands of residents from in and around Ye town chanted slogans like "We want peace" and "We're tired of war" as they marched from the town center to the Freedom Square, where State Governor Emmanuel Adil addressed the crowd. The governor returned this week from Juba, where the president briefed the governor and the other officials on the peace process in Khartoum. The demonstrators say they want President Kiir, former Vice President Riek Machar, and other opposition leaders to ensure that they fully implement all signed agreements. Resident Esther Yona says she welcomes the power sharing and governance agreement the leaders signed in Khartoum recently. But speaking in Arabic, she asked Kir Machar and their allies to admit they made mistakes so the country can move on.
We should accept our mistakes. Our sons have been committing atrocities against us. But from today, we have forgiven them. We want love and unity from our leaders. I'm calling on President Salva Kiir and his brother Riek Machar to tell their forces on the ground to open for us all the roads so that we can go and farm and collect firewood.
Domba Tom Banja, a secondary school teacher in Ye Town, is urging South Sudan's leaders to implement the agreement they signed to avoid returning to war.
They should implement whatever has been signed, because without implementation, it will lose all the meaning. Secondly, I want to see all those people in camps coming back to their homes, because they are really suffering there. That's not their home. They belong here. The road should be open so that it will also boost the economy of the country. The dollar has gone so high. If all this is done, I'm sure this country will be one of the best.
Emmanuel Sebit Lodongo, a senior priest at the Catholic Church in Ye Town, hopes implementing the peace deal will bring an end to human rights violations. Speaking in Arabic, Emmanuel says although the warring parties signed a ceasefire deal and agreed to peacefully end the conflict, armed men continue to abduct and kill civilians in Mugo County.
We cry for peace.
We have been crying for peace and the agreement has been signed in Khartoum. The people and the leaders need to be serious. People have been slaughtered like goats in Mugo and others have been arrested and detained in Tore.
Bishop Hilary Luasi Adeba, Ye Diocese of the Episcopal Church of South Sudan, is urging the South Sudanese leaders to instruct the armed forces to silence their guns and respect the peace agreement.
I want to see that immediately, our brothers who are holding arms should have heard the agreement and drop their guns. I want to pray for a quick and effective implementation of the agreement. And I want to pray that peace, forgiveness, and reconciliation be among us for the wrong we have done for ourselves. And I want to pray for the return of refugees. I want to pray for the return of displaced people.
Speaking on behalf of President Kiir, Governor Adel says the government is committed to fully implementing the peace agreement and promoting good governance in Ye River State. Adel is calling on opposition forces and citizens to open a new page of reconciliation across the state.
As people of Ye River State, irrespective of our status, whether an IO or opposition of any party.
The governor called on the people of Ye River State to promote peace and harmony, saying it starts at home with family members. He says the peace will eventually spread across the state and the entire country. For VOA News, I'm Daniel Friday Martin.
And that's our show for this Friday. We leave you with the song Bundele by Awi Logo Boomba.
Bundele, 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 boom, boom, bundele, bundele, boom, 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 zumba, boom, zoom, boom, zumba, boom, zoom, boom, zumba, zumba, zumba.
We've been listening to Awilo Lugumba performing the song Bundele. I'm Carol Van Dam in Washington. Thanks for listening and have a terrific weekend. Join us again on Monday for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from The Voice of America.